Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in beautiful, snowy Denver, Colorado. This is the Hoban Minute, and I'm your host, Eric Singular, sitting alongside the esteemed Mr. Robert T. Hoban, Esquire of the Hoban Law Group. And today we are talking about experiencing cannabis through art. We are joined by the CEO of Cannabition, JJ Walker. JJ, thank you for being here with us today.
Hey, I really appreciate it. Looking forward to talking to you guys.
Likewise, and we're very excited to hear how Cannabition is doing in the days of COVID-19, maybe how your plans for Cannabition have changed or shifted over the last few months. But before we get too much into the novelty that is your immersive cannabis museum, let's talk a little bit about you and just your personal journey, because it's my understanding, and just from the conversations I've had with folks in the industry, that you've been an essential piece of the industry, particularly here in Denver, Colorado, in the early days, working on event organizing and just bringing people together, networking. So give us a little bit about your backstory, how you got into the cannabis industry.
Yeah, man. Wow. All of a sudden I'm 40 years old, which kind of blows my mind. It's sure gone fast. I've been an entrepreneur since I was 18 years old. My parents would leave town a lot and throw a lot of house parties, and that kind of trickled over when I went to college, and a business partner and I basically started a little production company and started throwing parties in little venues that ended up over several years getting larger and larger, to the point that we were producing music festivals, conventions, tons of weekly events. And so, my heart and soul and background is really producing experiences that people come and enjoy. And I love the marketing aspect of it. I love the experience of watching what you put together live and in action, and then it's all over, and then you get to start over again. So I still do. I still own a production company called the Collective 360 with a business partner, Gavin Belt, and we still produce an annual Halloween and New Year's party with several thousand people that come and attend those parties. And about 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit longer, 2008, Obama goes into office. He basically says that, the federal government's not going to intercede with state laws around medical marijuana. And I was 27 years old, and I was like, what a unique opportunity to try something different. I've been throwing parties for a long time, and I enjoy doing that, but I want to kind of expand my horizons. And so I reached out to a couple friends, and a good friend of mine, Ryan Vincent, who has been a staple in the cannabis industry for a long time and has done a lot of great things in the space. Him and I basically went out, and there was, I think, one dispensary open at that given point, EMC with Denver Release. And we went and we found a little, it was basically like a massage center, wellness center, because at that point you had to have like kind of wellness services associated with your medical marijuana. And we talked the lady into basically giving us the size of a large closet to open up a dispensary. And so we literally hand built the thing amongst four of us in this maybe 20 by 10 room, and told my parents I was working on something, but couldn't tell them what it was until it was done, because I knew that they would have no understanding of what the hell I was trying to do, i.e. sell marijuana to the public and people and the police know about it. It was like, it was mind blowing at that point. And it took us about 4 months to build it out. And the day we opened, EMC came by and sold us some of our first product. Cause at that point you could buy cannabis out of backpacks. And we put our first four strains of marijuana on the shelf, charged $120 a quarter, invited my parents over to check out this new dispensary that Ryan and I had started. And we were off to the races in the marijuana industry. And so that was, I think about June, July of 2009. We went in for a business license even at that point, and they didn't have licenses for marijuana, so they gave us a horticultural license. it was some interesting time. And so through that, we went through the whole process of the industry getting developed, and the Department of Revenue took over marijuana enforcement. This gentleman by Matt Cook kind of became the head of the department, which I think was one of the biggest blessings for the Colorado marijuana industry. Is he looked at the industry from not only the government side, but he also really was interested in what the owners and the principals in the cannabis industry thought and how to actually develop the rules and laws. So we got to be a part of like the rulemaking committee and really kind of setting those foundations, those starting rules around how medical marijuana is going to be regulated. And through the process of creating vertical integration, where early days, you know, they said, okay, now you own a dispensary, now you have to own a grow. You have to be vertically integrated. And for each grow, each dispensary you have to have a different grow. And they did a lot of different rulemaking across the board to like basically get companies to basically fall out and make it as complicated as possible. So through that, about 2.5 years, I ended up selling my portion of the dispensary and got, you know, one of the first early buyouts. And at that point, it was more money than I've ever seen. I sold in about late 2011. And then long from there, just less than about a year and a half later, came up with this idea. Recreational marijuana is coming legal. People want to come here and experience it. Let's start a marijuana tour company. So we started My 420 Tours and brought in another business partner, Danny Schaefer. And we started doing tours from like taking people on buses to grows and dispensaries to then Buds and Suds, where you take them to breweries and grows to talk to a bunch of hotels and they were letting us rent out hotel rooms, and they would pick up a vaporizer at the front desk and be able to consume cannabis in their room using a vaporizer because it didn't make it smell. And that was a great way for them to get extra business and traffic to their hotels. And the company did very well. We operated that company for about 4.5 years before I got an opportunity to sell it to my business partner and another gentleman. Because my dream was the next thing, which was actually creating physical spaces that we hoped and eventually would become these places that people would come and consume cannabis, but not just sit down at a table and be able to smoke, but basically actually have an experience around consuming cannabis in a shared environment. And that's where Cannabition was born.
Well, so let's break those down into bite-sized pieces, because the history is something that ultimately is lost on a lot of people. And what I mean by history is, and you know, it feels like a long, long, long time ago. And as you point out, it wasn't terribly long ago, but we all age dog years in this industry. The idea that a store, a commercial regulated business. Well, commercial business, let's not say regulated, opens up before there are regulations. This is the thing that's lost on a lot of people. So in Colorado, we had the constitutional amendment that provided rights for caregivers and for patients, and caregivers sort of maximized that language in our state constitution to open up stores. Stores were not specifically contemplated. So to your point, it opened up, the industry began before there was really regulation and certainly contemplation of it. And to your point, when you go into a city and say, we're looking for a license, we want to do everything by the book, I'm going to throw a term at you that you may recall. Do you remember the term plant husbandry? So plant husbandry, whatever the heck to this day that means as a designation by the city of Denver in terms of how buildings were going to be used, husbandry was the definition, was the category by which they would allow cultivators to operate. And then ultimately storefronts began to pop up all over the place too, all pre-regulation. So it presents a challenge in places like California, in places like Colorado, in places like Washington, where stores began to open up. There were commercial outfits, commercial distribution, but there really were no regulations. It was, is this legal? Well, it's certainly not federally legal. And maybe we can paint a gray area you can operate in the state. But the cities, they started to say, holy cow, what's going on in our jurisdiction? We don't know. So talk a little bit about that process. Talk a little bit about just some of the folks that you had to interact with to actually get whatever sort of permissions they would allow for, because there was no regulation at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Denver licensing, when we went in there, they had heard about it, but they had no idea what to do with it. And we were within the first probably 10 groups that had walked in that building and asked for a business license. And it was supposedly okay and legal. And at that point, there was a lot of underground meetings, you know, the early days of business associations. And what was that spot called? I can't remember now, but literally like underground meetings where we were talking about regulations and who's going to represent us legally. And it was really confusing, exciting, scary times. And I mean, literally when we opened the first day, within an hour, there was a cop outside with his lights on, and we thought we were screwed. And it just turned out that he was actually pulling over a car out front. But we literally thought that this was it. We'd spent all this time and money building this place, and they're going to come shut us down right away, which they didn't end up doing. And so those early days were really confusing. And fortunately, again, yeah, like the city started to get some things together. People like Matt Cook came into the fold and started actually listening to the people that were actually starting these businesses and making us feel a little bit more comfortable that we weren't going to get arrested. But I mean, almost the entire time through that process that it was really nerve wracking because it wasn't legal. And at that point, everything was self-funded. Like the idea of raising money for a dispensary to grow in 2009. Yeah, right. So, you know, we were just it was by the seat of our pants and how we're going to pay for things and what tomorrow was going to look like and whether we came to our shop and cops were going to come bust down our door.
So spin that forward to, you know, moving into a new jurisdiction and looking at there were no stores open pre-regulation. It's sort of everybody line up at the start line. Get your money together, get your applications together, get your team together. And on the other side of that, you had regulators that were perhaps a little bit more well-equipped to handle it. And by the way, great shout out to Matt Cook, who really did come into this industry as a Department of Revenue official, knowing nothing about the cannabis industry. And he wanted to make sure that he understood how the industry operated. And in different jurisdictions, we've got bureaucrats that run different regulatory agencies in different ways. So what was your experience like getting into that, you know, line up at the start line, get a license and go type environment that you moved into?
Oh, it was crazy. I mean, because we were one of the only groups operating at that point, but they basically said, okay, we're going to actually give everyone licenses. And they set all these crazy deadlines at that point. I mean, it was like, it's okay, you have to have this thing next week, or you got 2 weeks or something, you know, some things were a month, but that thing a month away was like months worth of work. And then trying to find a lawyer that actually understood what we were talking about. Like at that point, the lawyer was, you know, he still is the man, but Warren Edson, you know, he was a part of the industry from before the industry was really formed and was a part of High Times. And so everyone went to Warren Edson. We have to know what he knows and how that works. Another good friend of mine was like one of the first early industry lobbyists that really understood the business as well, Matt Brown. And so we went to these kind of key people that just kind of knew what they knew and we based everything off of what they said. And, you know, that day we had to go basically give our paperwork. And it was the same background check as like, if you want to own a casino, the way that they set it up. Matt Cook had a lot to do with the Colorado casino industry regulation and applied a lot of those same rules to applying for a marijuana license. So literally, like, you know, I'm a 28-year-old kid at that point. And so, you know, I had maybe two full boxes full of, like, my history. And then there's other guys that are, you know, and they're much older than I am who are bringing boxes and boxes of their history and every single bank form that they've ever filled out And every piece of your history was basically presented in front of this group to determine whether or not they're going to issue a license. And it was very scary. And, that was just what it was. And the course after that is that it was this regulation after regulation that you have to get to fill, or they are walking in your door and they're shutting you down at that point. Because once they licensed you, they had you by the, balls.
By the cojones. I want to come
cojones,
back.
Yeah, there's a proper word. There you go.
When you were talking about your young days, throwing house parties, and you've always had this an aptitude for bringing people together and having fun, I can only imagine that cannabis was probably a big part of those experiences in your life. And it's interesting to kind of listen to your history and then think about this museum that you've created. And I really wanted to hone in on this idea that when we think about experiencing cannabis, so much of the time we're likely thinking about consumption, because this is such an experiential substance, if you will. But I really love, looking at the pictures on your website. I haven't gotten to go experience cannabis, and I know right now everything is on pause, and I definitely want to talk about that. But tell us a little bit about the inspiration behind this idea coming from the marijuana industry and all these things that you did setting up this business. What was the impetus to then go and create this this artistic experience?
Yeah, the end goal of the artistic experience is the question is everyone has, how the hell do you make money if people are coming in and they're consuming cannabis but they can't buy it? That was the baseline of it. In 2013, we started My 420 Tours, which again, almost basically still to this day, lived in a very, very gray space. But the idea that the definition of private versus public. And so we launched My 420 Tours with the idea that a bus, a limo bus, in the state of Colorado is considered private. And so from that, we knew that when we're transporting people between a dispensary, another activity, that consuming cannabis on the bus was technically kind of legal. and we got away with that, quote unquote, got away with that for years. We did these cannabis cooking classes, and we used this little cooking school up in the Highlands that people could rent out, and you rent something out, people from the public can't come in. And so we were inside of this private cooking school, and you could cook with cannabis and consume the cannabis inside the cooking school. And we had just points that the city just didn't really know what to do with us. And based upon the open interpretation of the law, and the fact that we did stay in very good touch with the right public officials. If we wouldn't have done that, if we would have stuck up our finger, they would have absolutely trampled on us. But we were trying to do it the right way. And they, I think, to a degree, appreciated that and allowed us to continue to operate. But through that experience, as My 420 Tours, and getting to see this just dynamic group of people coming and experiencing the consumption of cannabis together, but also getting to do these different cool experiences on cannabis was super cool. You got a 75-year-old grandma and a 21-year-old kid sitting next to each other on the bus consuming cannabis together, laughing and enjoying each other. There's not too many entertainment environments that is ever appropriate. I don't know if there's any. Maybe a Broncos game or something, but through that experience is it's great and all to run this tour company, but man, the overhead's really expensive. These buses every single day, the cost of these hotel rooms, all the staffing and everything else. I'm I want to get into more of a traditional type of entertainment business of just, like a bar or club runs. But if we can't serve cannabis at these locations, how do we make money? And the real inspiration came with the idea that there's this new world of Instagrammable experiences where people are going to these museums, it's getting built in Colorado called Meow Wolf. and they've got Museum of Ice Cream and Happy Place and these places that people are paying $20, $30, $40 to go through these different art exhibits that are not only cool to look at, but are also really cool to take pictures with. And we thought, what a cool opportunity to build something around the around cannabis and the culture, history, and celebration of it that not only is educational, it's immersive, and it's Instagrammable. And that was sort of the beginning concept of where Cannabition came to life.
So that has been something that really has been a challenge, right? And you've tackled it headlong and looked at different ways to bring people to it. So there's an educational component. There's a, you know, economic component. Obviously, people want to build things and build businesses to generate some sort of profit. But as you point out, so many folks have tried to figure out how to get into this industry without, quote unquote, touching the plant. And you've done it very well, and you've done it in a location that ultimately will drive millions and millions and millions of tourists into that city for purposes of letting go, of just getting away from it all. And cannabis increasingly becomes part of that conversation. It's that vacation mode idea, right? It's that idea that I'm going to go out and I'm going to do everything that I don't do in my normal everyday life because this is the time to do it. I have the freedom to do it. And at the end of the day, providing a little bit of history along the lines of, you know, an artistic enterprise is extraordinarily special. It's something that I know we all want to get out and visit. But what would you tell our listeners would be, how would you describe to them the experience that they would be coming into in this space?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the idea is that you're paying it just to kind of preface it. The goal of it was to create sort of this immersive museum. At the same time, we were focused heavily on lobbying with the city of Las Vegas to actually get it consumption friendly. And that aspect where you could consume cannabis in this experience was that next level for us. That was our full intention. That said, that we felt like this could be a gateway and into that type of opportunity. And, you know, it's tough being the first through the door. And the education to first even raise money to this idea that's totally out there wasn't easy as it is. And then it was a whole next level to really educate the public and what it took to basically get people to come in and pay that ticket price to come through. But what people learned and what they got to experience, I mean, the reviews say it for themselves, people loved it. And what it basically was is we started with a story of like, what if you were THC? I am cannabis. What would my experience be? And so as you walk in, you kind of start with the idea of 420. And the first room, it's got these giant 420 letters. We kind of tell a little bit about where the word 420 came. You can climb over the 420 letters and get some good pictures. There's a big white rhino on the wall. And one of my favorite old school strains was white rhino. And then we get to talk about what white rhino is and how it's an indica and things like that. And we've got these tour guides that are super educated in what they're talking about. And so while they have this very visually appealing experience that they can touch and take pictures with, the tour guide's also telling them about why it's there. And so then as you move through the first room, we've got the seed, which is where cannabis began. And there's a giant big seed bed and you can lay in the seed and it's kind of in a dark, dark room, like you're underground and there's these roots that are coming out of the ceiling. And so you're kind of telling about the origins of cannabis and talking about what a seed is and how it kind of starts growing. And then you move into the different stages. And so the next stage, we've got a grow room with grow lights and a big caterpillar there to talk about how you know, things like bugs can impact plants and then talking about the different stages of plants to then giant marijuana buds that are, we call hug buds in our next room. And they're like your harvested buds. And we designed them in a way that they look like different types of strains. And you know, so we had our Durban Poison and our Strawberry Cough and, you know, some of my favorite old school strains, but the strains have changed a little bit over the years. And then, yeah, it moves into some different rooms, like the smoke room with smoke rings. And then it talks about concentrates on one wall. And throughout this as well, we've got sponsors for each of these different exhibits that kind of represent each of those different pieces. And then the last piece in there is actually the world's largest bong. And it's a 25-foot glass bong. There was a smokable bong that through the course of operating, we weren't allowed to consume. But the day we closed, man, we had a big sesh.
Well, it sounds the interactive element of it is really what's exciting, because I go back to in 1993, I went to the Hemp, Hash, and Marijuana Museum in Amsterdam, and it was look through the glass at these plants, and then, you know, there was an old pipe behind a piece of glass, and there was, you know, some seeds here and there. So I really can appreciate and admire what you've done. And this does seem to be something that we're seeing happen in multiple places around the country. Maybe not on the scale of what you're putting together, but this you know, tourist destination, a educational component, and something that does set the table for saying there's a little bit of a story here that you probably never heard before.
Let's talk a little bit about our brave new world, and maybe it is a little bit of a sore subject, because I know it sounds like you've had to close your doors. At least you got to use that bong on that last day. But tell us a little bit about how you've, and this business and cannabis has been impacted by the pandemic that we're facing right now, and how your strategy or your vision has had to shift a little bit given this, I don't know what else to call it besides kind of a new world order.
New world order. Yeah, government control has been very much a part of all of our lives in the cannabis industry. So you adapt, and we're an adaption. The experience that we had there, you know, we did have an issue with the location, in the sense that we were really close to casinos, and in Las Vegas, if it doesn't serve the casino, it doesn't serve anybody. And so we went through this year-long process of trying to get consumption passed for our location, and got it to the point that basically they were going to vote and they were going to pass the law before basically one meeting before they made the vote. And the casino industry came in and just laid loose on cannabis and on the idea that they were concerned that having people consuming cannabis too close to a casino potentially impacted their federal laws around casino, like casinos are federally regulated. And they were saying, if this marijuana museum that's in this totally separate building, you know, 100 yards or 50 yards away from the closest casino, could potentially impact their license, which is absolute horseshit, excuse the language. You know, that location for ourselves, like, we ended up getting the law passed, but they put in these buffers, so our location there would never actually work for consumption, and that's my goal long term. So from there, we actually went over to Planet 13, which is pretty much the world's largest dispensary at this point. They are staple in Vegas. They have really taken this approach of creating a more art forward kind of interactive cannabis buying experience. And they've got 120,000 square foot in their building, and they were super excited at the opportunity to bring cannabis into Planet 13. And we actually signed a lease with them to take over 7,000 square feet and build the next big dream in there. Super excited. These guys are doing over 100,000 visitors a month to their location. And so for us, instead of being out there on the island by ourselves in downtown Las Vegas, we now have this great partner that now we can incorporate not only the art and the museum, the events, but also give brands the opportunity to present themselves to the public in a completely unique way, and to really build that brand loyalty to help sell more product and to build their customer base. So we were really excited about that. From that, had to go back and raising a little bit more money and getting new sponsors on board. And we had everything locked up, ready to go. And then literally, a month later, Corona hit, and and everything shut down. And so we ended up being on a stopping point at that point.
Well, and JJ, where does that put you today, I guess? Because we were looking at the website and we had seen that there were some plans to launch at that new location in the winter, I guess this winter, winter 2020. But right now, I guess, what are you kind of thinking for next steps? And let our listeners know, because I know just from listening to you that I want to go and visit Cannabition as soon as I can. So where can we stay up to date with kind of the latest news or developments on Cannabition through your platform?
Yeah. So we're kind of in the process of looking at, just like any entertainment company right now, it's just not allowed. So we're kind of in this holding pattern. Investors kind of are in a holding pattern for us to get to that next level. A lot of brands are kind of waiting to see what happens. But we're also looking at some digital options and some AR, VR, some ways that we can take Cannabition and make it more of a multimedia experience that will then eventually turn in and be a part of the physical experience. And so we're shifting and pivoting. And just like I think a lot of other companies are, and I know that several conferences have gone into this sort of digital world, it's still early and nobody knows what's going to work or not going to work, but we're looking at, how can we continue the dream, continue to develop the experience in today's world, and in consideration that within, a month, hopefully it's months, or if it even takes longer, that that our brand and our vision is continues to grow and develop and be out in the world, and that people can have something that they can experience, whether they are in the physical location or not.
It's always been in this industry, Corona, pre-Corona, post-Corona, about resilience and being able to adapt. And that, that's certainly a sentiment we've heard from a lot of the folks in the global cannabis industry, as it relates to what they've had to do with their businesses in recent months, and just the general state of being in this industry is you always have to be ready for whatever the heck is next, and you never know what it's going to be.
You got to be rigid yet flexible. And, JJ, this is going to come back around. And certainly once we get through the woods here, I think you're primed for some very special things. And we look forward to visiting and sharing some of that stuff with you as well. But at the end of the day, what is your prediction for when there is some sense of normality that might return in terms of tourist traffic in Las Vegas?
Honestly, it's an impossible question to answer.
It's an impossible question, for sure.
I was talking with some higher up people with Circus LA, which, they're a multi-billion dollar company. They don't have an idea. So it's touch and go here in Las Vegas. And, while some of the casinos are open, because God forbid people stop gambling, everything else is closed. And it's weird here because, everything again is run by the casinos. They'll let people gamble and they can buy drinks in there, but you can't go into a regular bar. The bars are closed. If you have a bar with food, you can stay open. If you have a bar with food that has gambling in it, they shut down your gambling in your bar with food. So it's really, the politics in Las Vegas are very complicated, and a lot of people are up in arms and focused on their own kind of interests. So it's really hard to tell what that next step's going to be or when it's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, for now, we will hurry up and wait, but we are so excited to talk to you today, to look forward to what is next. And anybody who's listening, Cannabition.com, I'm sure that there will be updates there. Follow Cannabition on all social platforms for more information. And JJ, it's just been awesome to talk to you. Thank you for taking us down a walk down memory lane with the early days of cannabis here in Colorado, and just sharing your experiences with us. It's been awesome, man.
Thanks, guys. And just so you know, it's 420 here, so happy 420.
Happy 420, JJ. Thanks, sir.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law, and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.